Dubler. I have the great privilege of chairing the board of Machon Hadar. And in that capacity, I have the great privilege of welcoming you all here tonight and just thanking you for coming. It's an amazing, for those of you who haven't come up to the front and looked out, it's an amazing thing to come up to the front and look up. So really, my job tonight is just very briefly to welcome you and then to introduce Rabbi Ethan Tucker. So welcome. Welcome, new students. We're so happy to have you here. There's nothing more amazing than the energy of the beginning of the summer program here at the Yeshiva. Welcome, students who are alums and have been here as full-time students before. Welcome, part-time students. Welcome, people who have just come in and are here just to learn for the night. Welcome, parents. Everyone here is part of this amazing community that is Machon Hadar. And the beginning of the summer program is always an opportunity for all of us here to take a moment and look out and say thank you and say welcome and reflect on the sort of amazing things that have happened around here since the last time that we welcomed a class of summer students. And think about all the amazing things that are going to go on over the summer and in the year to come. So in particular tonight, I wanted to offer my own congratulations to Rabbi Shahel, who I can't see right now. But who just in the lead up to the opening of our summer program just won the Covenant Award, which is an amazing recognition of everything he does to make this yeshiva and all of Machon Hadar such a special place. I'm going to introduce Ethan in just a minute. My final job as chair of the board is just to remind everyone that actually running Machon Hadar is an incredibly difficult financial proposition. And those of us who run its budget can assure you that any dollar you give to Machon Hadar goes directly to trying to run everything we do at this yeshiva. We don't do fancy fundraising dinners. We don't do fancy benefits. This is what we do, and we try to do it as well as we can. And we try to do it for the benefit of everyone who can possibly think of being part of this community. And really, the only way we can do it is if everybody helps by giving whatever you can give to help us run everything that we do here that makes this place so special. So that's as fancy a fundraising event as you're going to get invited to this year. But as an extra technical touch this year, we have put an envelope in your program. Thank you. There's the envelope. So we've gone high tech. And we ask you if you can not to leave here without contributing something in that envelope. To help us keep growing at the incredible rate that we're growing so that each summer we can look out and be amazed at how much we've done over the past year. So with that, it's my enormous pleasure to introduce to you one of the Rishei Yeshiva at Machon Hadar, one of the teachers who makes this place such an amazing place to learn and to be a part of this community. I can say for myself, there's no one I know in the academic or Jewish world who is more willing to tackle hard, controversial, interesting, and provocative contemporary topics than Rabbi Ethan Tucker. And it's my great pleasure to introduce him here tonight.
So welcome to all of you, and thank you for a wonderful evening of energetic learning. I want to once again reiterate an amazing welcome to Yeshiva Hadar's 2011 cohort of full-time summer students who are continuing the tradition this summer of anchoring this space as a Makom Torah for the broader community in the way that we've seen it tonight. So please stand up for a second, a full-time student. So I want to share with you tonight a few thoughts on, as the title suggests, moving towards a sustainable egalitarian Judaism. How do we create practices and communities and institutions that will ensure that the values that we hold dear will be sustained well beyond our own experiences and lifetimes and shape the future landscape of the Jewish community? And while there's a lot to say in that regard, I want to focus on three elements that I think are critical in our present moment. The first is a sense of mission and purpose that's grounded in Torah. The second is a palpable sense of peer reinforcement. And the third is true self-sufficiency. Let's start with mission and purpose. In 21st century America's world of virtually limitless possibilities, it's a world in which ethnicity no longer meaningfully binds us in the way it once did. Judaism competes in a marketplace of ideas. We must offer a sense of mission and purpose. People don't choose a 3,000-year-old religion because of its comfortable correspondence with the familiar and the conventional. You choose it because of its transcendent power and because of its ability to critique and direct your life. Judaism, anchored in Torah, beckons us by imagining who you might be instead of simply reflecting back at you that which you already are. It's not really that interesting to belong to a group today without a sense of what the group stands for and why it matters. When Torah, the treasure trove of Jewish wisdom that we've accumulated from Har Sinai until the present, stands at the heart of Jewish life, then that sense of relevance and importance becomes palpable. Compelling Jewish individuals and communities are those on a path of self-discovery, those engaged in deep learning about what is demanded of them as human beings and as Jews, those who understand that Judaism's power lies in its invitation to contribute and to transform both our lives and God's world. Belonging alone for the sake of belonging is no longer enough. A community that sees Torah as a mission has to always sense that Torah matters and is relevant to real lives. Instead of engaging in a lifelong struggle to somehow contort ourselves into some otherworldly, platonic Torah, the contemporary mission-driven Jew asks, what does the Torah have to say about navigating the details of my life, of my embedded and my embodied experience? The conversations that matter the most and that we focus on in this Beit Midrash are not, am I loyal to halakha? Do I believe in the divinity of the Torah? Those are frankly stale questions that emerge from a starting point of alienation and angst. Instead, we have to spend time asking, what does the Torah demand of me? How should I, as a 21st century Jew, keep the mitzvot? Those kinds of questions take us away from dithering and deliberation, and they bring us to action and to conviction. And they create a directive community that's anchored in purpose. The Torah itself makes it clear that all of these efforts of our lives have to be rooted in a sense of mission. When we hear about the Mishkan, the temporary sanctuary in the desert, being constructed, we find a very logical architectural progression. The last chapters of the book of Shemot show how the woven curtains of the central tent were made first, followed by the roof, and then the boards that functions as the walls. And only after that are the Aron, the Shulchan, the Menorah, and those other key elements inside placed in the enclosed space. Just as you first build your house, and then you move in the furniture. But when God gives the initial command to build the Mishkan, beginning in Shmot Kaf Hei, the order is very different. And there, the specifications are first for the Ark, the table, and the Menorah, and only then do we hear about the Yiriot, the roof, the walls. And the message here is very clear. Before you build, you have to have a deep understanding of what you are building for. Without the Ark, those curtains and those walls have no reason for being. And so while an engineer always starts with the structure, the Torah calls us when we envision our community to be architects and to remember what is it that we're building for. We have to move beyond in that sense just thinking about self-perpetuation and existing Jewish communities for the sake of being Jewish communities and to always ask, what is the Torah, what is the sense of mission and purpose that lies at the center of our consciousness? Now let's turn to peer reinforcement for a minute. A Jewish community is only as good as the person who's sitting next to you. That feature, which makes Jewish life so compelling and powerful, is also its Achilles heel, because it depends on the constant reinforcement of behaviors and values by one's peers. You can, of course, have an individualized and personal form of Jewish practice, but it's always a shadow of its full potential. Without a minyan, you don't say all the things in the Siddur. Without other learning Jews in a room like this, studying Torah can become solitary and lonely. Without a core of Shabbat observant Jews, you are a lone witness to the Torah's power to control and direct time. Sustainable Jewish communities are those where you feel that peer reinforcement, where each person is supported and strengthened by everybody else, where the web of community is so thick that ultimately it spiritually undergirds each of its members. That kind of radiant core of a community is the only one that can genuinely offer newcomers to be drawn to its heat and to its warmth and the possibility of transformation. Now, you can usually feel whether a community has that peer reinforcement moments after you enter into a room. Is the synagogue peer reinforced? Is it self-evident that the people in that room pray with regularity, such that they own the prayers? Some of them even able to utter paragraphs and long passages by heart, going off book from the Siddur from time to time. When people in a community own the davening and its rhythms in that way, there's a kind of a vortex that is created that actually has the capacity then to draw others in who are newer to that enterprise and to bring higher up and further in those for whom it is familiar. Without that peer reinforcement, we actually all end up potentially feeling lost at cross purposes with other people in the room or totally dependent on those who are choreographing and orchestrating the experience. You can ask this question about knowledge. Are people learning Jewish texts, whether or not their synagogue has a class going on that week? Are they empowered to access those texts on their own and to find meaning and purpose for their lives in them? Are parents doing meaningful learning with their children? Are they transmitting their own relationship with Torah to the next generation? A sustainable Jewish community is one in which just having had a rigorous Jewish education does not promote you to a quasi-rabbinic role. Rather, it enters you into a fellowship of committed Jews who reinforce one another through lifelong learning. And we could ask the same question about peer reinforcement of mitzvot. Is there a rich framework of Jewish practice in place? Is the answer to the question, are there 50 families who observe Shabbat in this community, an unequivocal yes, without having to equivocate on what the meaning of observe is? Sustainable Jewish communities feature a commitment to Jewish practice that is not sporadic, but reliable and ubiquitous, where when I feel down and vulnerable, the passion of other people can pick me up. And with so many challenges to integrating the mitzvot into our personal lives, we desperately need communities that we can count on to help us succeed. This kind of peer-reinforced community is a tall order, because ultimately what it requires is that everybody in the community is a part of making it happen. It's an amazing tradition in Masechet Sanhedrin, which we're learning now in the yeshiva, which uses a verse in the book of Yeshayahu to think back on the reign of King Chizkiyahu in the first temple. And it says as follows, on that day, this is the verse, his burden shall drop from your back and his yoke from your neck. The yoke shall be destroyed because of oil. Said Rabbi Yitzhak Napacha, the yoke of Sancheiriv, the Assyrian king, was destroyed by Chizkiyahu's oil, which burned in the synagogues and the houses of study. What did Chizkiyahu do? He thrust a sword into the door of the Beit Midrash and said, anyone who does not engage in Torah will be pierced by this sword. Following this decree, a comprehensive search of the entire country failed to turn up a single ignoramus. There was no child, no man, no woman who was not an expert in even the laws of ritual purity. Now, like most rabbinic interpretations, this is not a claim of the history as it actually occurred in the late Iron Age. It's thinking about what is the meaning of history and the effects of the choices that we make as communities on our ultimate destiny. Sancheiriv here stands in for the destroyer of national identity. Sancheiriv, about whom rabbinic texts say, ba'u vilbelu mot ha'olam, the one who ultimately dissolved all the particularist ethnic identities of the ancient Near East and turned them into one homogeneous mass. And he stands there with the hallmark Assyrian strategy of conquering peoples and deporting them and destabilizing them, against Chizkiyahu, who finally figures out how to stop this process. And there's a clear plan of attack here, and it is a war on ignorance. But what's striking here is he does not open a school for gifted students or for leaders. He actually puts in motion a plan to demand literacy and learning from everyone. And the results in this text are stunning. Even the most arcane topics had been mastered by society's youngest and most marginal students. And the message here, I think, is very clear for us until today. The antidote for the spiritual and national entropy that forces like Sancheriv bring on our world is a society in which one can count on everyone, every last member, to reinforce its values and its commitments. A Jewish community is only as good as the person sitting next to you. And in our own spiritually entropic times, we have to find a way to embody this insight more than ever, while building communities where peer reinforcement is one of the central givens of a committed Jewish life. Finally, we must speak of self-sufficiency. While no man is an island, entire of itself, individuals and communities still have to ask themselves, what would the Jewish future look like if it depended on me and my community alone? Could I, along with those with whom I have a reciprocal, mutually supportive religious relationship, be entrusted with the next chapter of the Jewish story? Is my community's commitment robust enough to sustain generations of ongoing love of Torah and mitzvot? And if we're not able to answer those questions in the affirmative with integrity, then what are we doing? Are we somehow living on spiritual welfare while other people actually pay the taxes? We need others to fulfill that mission. And Klal Yisrael always, as a value, has to push us to think very expansively about our Jewish community and who it contains. But you also can't build your Jewish future by delegating it to those who will not share your Jewish present with you. Even the most elementary biology student knows the difference between symbiotic and parasitic relationships. And a sustainable egalitarian Judaism will only exist when Jews who see the Beit Midrash and Beit Knesset as egalitarian institutions bake matzah, serve as shochtim, construct eruvin and mikvaot, and write sifrei Torah. It's one of the amazing things, one of the most privileging things of working in this yeshiva, to see the ways in which some of that vision is actually coming to life in very real ways. The class that happened downstairs being no small example of what it means to actually have in one's community not only a woman who is able to write and does write Sifrei Torah, but able to teach that and to transmit it to the next generation of Sofrot who will stand in her place. I, and I hope you do too, want to live in a Jewish community that can look itself in the mirror and honestly say that it can go head-to-head with any other Jewish community, past or present. A community that produces careful and thoughtful readers of our original texts, the most advanced of which will merit the designation Talmidei Chachamim, a place where Hebrew is at least everyone's second language, if not their first. A setting in which Jewish music is not only sung, but composed. A community that can be entrusted with the Jewish future, because its commitment to prayer, to learning, and to chesed is unshakable, and one that has the tools to transmit those values forward without needing to rely on others. So how do we get there? Mainly by starting to ask ourselves different questions. I want us to take some guidance from a brief story told in the Talmud Bavli about Yosef, the son of Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. He falls ill, his soul separates from his body, and he gets a brief glimpse of another world, of the world to come. When he returns to his body, his father asked him, "What did you see?" And he said, "Olam hafuch ra'iti, elyonim lemata v'tachtonim lemala." I saw a backwards world. The upper things were at the bottom, and the lower things were at the top. The father answered, "Olam barur ra'ita. You saw the world clearly." We often see things clearly when we look at them in reverse. The clearest vision is achieved not by thinking how we progress up the ladder of time from the present to the future, But when that vision of our future actually occupies the ground floor of our religious consciousness, and we then make the necessary decisions to make sure that we'll get there, we will only achieve a sustainable egalitarian Judaism when we start thinking in reverse, beginning with the future as it ought to be and working backwards from it to our own moment. We need to ask different questions. Instead of thinking about how to expand opportunities for egalitarian Torah learning, we need to ask, what would I need to do to create a world in which many of the books on that wall will have been written by women several generations from now? What investments do we need to make now to ensure that in 3 to 4 generations, the term Talmidei Chachamim is a gender-neutral term, with both men and women recognized as Gedolei Hador? Instead of just thinking about how we make incremental steps to encourage Jews already committed to egalitarianism to embrace greater observance, we need to ask, what steps do we take to create a world where Shmirat Mitzvot in no way correlates with one's stances on the full participation of men and women in all aspects of Jewish intellectual, spiritual, and ritual life? What do we need to do to ensure that the authors of the most compelling, rigorous, and learned presentations of Jewish learning also reflexively assume that the Beit Midrash and the Beit Knesset are egalitarian institutions? What could we do now to ensure that in the future, when a person has nothing more than to be directed to a community robust in its Shmirat Mitzvot, they would more likely than not be pointed to one that is egalitarian? When you think in reverse, the future actually began yesterday. Every action that you take plays a role. You can make the story come out differently by acting now as if that future is already here. If you want egalitarian Batei Midrash all over this city and other centers of Jewish life, then be firm in your own practice of Jewish learning. Come back on Tuesday night. Bring 5 friends. If you can't come, learn in your home, in your workplace, with your spouse, siblings, children, and grandchildren. If you want egalitarian minyanim to be the norm, be firm in your practice of davening. Memorize the words if you don't know them, so you can reinforce other people around you. Come to morning minyan at Yeshivat Hadar this summer and throughout the year. Maybe someday, pull over 9 people in an airport lounge to daven mincha. And recognize always that your own practice of mitzvot is not just a personal matter between you and God, but rather functions as glue that binds the Jewish community together in a shared sense of purpose. If we want Talmidei Chachamim of the first order and Torah that can speak loudly and clearly to our contemporary challenges, we must massively invest in it at every level of Jewish life and community. Seeing the world clearly in that way cannot be done on the cheap. We have to support, for as long as it takes, all institutions and initiatives that hold the promise of creating a sustainable egalitarian Jewish future. If you believe in that vision, if you want your own life to be part of the story that I'm telling tonight, support Mechon Adar by making a financial contribution. We work day and night here to bring that future closer. Our faculty teaches a Torah of mission and purpose, as you saw this evening. Our full-time students model what peer-reinforced community can look like. And all of you, and the scores of minyanim and institutions around the country with whom we work, hold out the promise of attaining self-sufficiency in Jewish life. But most important, I want to leave you tonight with the request that you live in the present as if the future is already here, because that is the key, ultimately, to sustainability. Ask yourself at every turn, can my current actions serve as stage directions for those who will take up my place after me? Yehi ratzon that we can always answer yes to that question, and that we make choices that will leave no doubt in the minds of future generations that we lived lives of Jewish conviction and integrity. Thank you so much for coming.